Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We have a special short for you today and joined by an old friend, Garnett West. Garnett, how you doing?
I'm doing good, sir. I can't complain about life whatsoever, sir.
That's great. For those of you who don't know Garnett, and it's hard not to because he's so pervasive in terms of the Ravens community out there, but certainly one of the voices that a lot of people listen to, certainly a very opinionated guy himself, but always have appreciated him. Appreciate your service to the Marine Corps for all those years, still working with them, as I understand. You got a big conference call tomorrow through the big grapevine I hear about.
Yes, sir. So, kind of have it. We already did a nice little visit when it came to the Pentagon, like for a couple barracks or whatever. So, the work I'm in is just deals with the barracks for the Marine Corps and just going around. I gave a class down to Parris Island where recruit training depots are. Now it's gonna be hopefully from what I heard, probably it's gonna happen. I know for a fact that you know a VP Vance will probably gonna be there. Hopefully, you know on the conference call. Last time I dealt with this, it was a pretty great success, and it led to a lot of ups for us as a barracks manager. So hopefully, It turns out pretty well, sir.
Very, very cool. Your background is in supply with the Marines, right?
So So it's logistics across the board. Yes, sir.
Okay. So logistics more about moving material where you need it in time of war, or is it also in time of peace trying to...
Both sides of the spectrum. So, you know, you can go to these training evolutions that we have down in 29 Palms, and you'll get certified for both sides of the aspect. So like, you'll learn about like different priority codes that you can use. Like when, perfect example, you're never going to hear it, but the most famous thing, if you O2 in something, it better be for a good reason. O2 is basically like, say if we're out in let's say Japan or whatever, and we need a part for a vehicle or let's say a fighter plane or whatever to, you know, get back in the air. We'll O2 that part. Basically, it's like for priority level. Let's just say that's urgent.
The letter O and then the number 2, not O-W-E-T-O.
Yeah, 02. You know, military thought we always call O as 0, but O2. So basically, it'll expedite. Just imagine like UPS. You're paying for a second day, next day air type of ordeal. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. We've seen that occasionally on CIA shows and whatnot, where they talk about something being priority one, and then all of a sudden, you know, the head of the whatever is in your office the next day, and you better have a good reason for having called something priority one.
Absolutely.
All right. Outstanding. That's a nice little insight into that. We're going to talk today a little bit, though, about the Ravens draft strategy. And a lot of people look at the Ravens 11 draft picks and say, boy, they need to get some more impactful players. They can't just draft 11 people, like 11 players, like they're throwing darts at a board, but they need to get more high round picks and less total picks. And Garnett, I know you're in that camp in terms of wanting more impactful players. We've talked a little bit about the JJ point scale and how that really precludes the Ravens from doing a lot of very meaningful moving up.
Right. And it's on us as fans. You know, this is the hard part as fans. Like, the more you like learn about stuff, the more you either become more, you become happy, and then you start to realize like, okay, damn, this is where we are. And, you know, it just, you know, it sucks being a good team, and you know, at the end of the day, like, you know, the whole, I'll let you break down like the actual number, but just to realize that you're like right there compared to what you're thinking, it sucks, man, because when you look at a nice draft class, you're thinking, oh, man, it'd be so nice if we can get this guy. Well, how about this? Well, we can put up, you know, we get these compensatory picks, put this together, and hopefully we should be able to get in there. And then you realize, wait a minute, that's not even like a good 65% of the price. Like, we need to add more to that. So, thank you for like, you know, having these great pods that you put on the regular, like, you know, just helping, you know, us understand, or myself, I should say, more than anything, you know, listening to the OT, the inside, you know, offensive line. Then sometimes you drop gems about the JJ charts, but like literally that made me like really learn a lot of how to really digest the JJ system in all, sir.
I appreciate you, Garnett, and that'll always be part of our regular draft day podcast too, is really having somebody evaluating trades as they occur. But one of the things about trades, first or second round in particular, first what day one or day two, I should say, is that you can almost predict without knowing what the compensation is. When you know the two teams are involved, you can almost tell right away what picks were swapped. You don't even almost have to wait for that to be said. And we usually have someone on every year predicting what was exactly was exchanged. And we're very surprised when it's more than that. It does happen sometimes at the top of the first round that there's an overpay for a player, but most of the times it's right on the money. Right. I want to talk about JJ points for a little bit. If you haven't heard of the scale before, JJ is for Jimmy Johnson, actually, who came up with the scale originally in the 1990s. I think he actually paid to have somebody impute the value of draft picks from information that was out there at the time. And they came up with what is now considered to be a very steep scale of valuation that starts at 3,000 of the value for the first pick. And I believe the last pick in the entire draft is worth 1. And by having those two values, then you impute all the values in the middle. Drops off very rapidly. So like the pick 2 is 2,600, then it's 2,200, then 1,800 for picks 1 through 4. So you can tell already you're down. The top quarterback in the entire draft is worth a high percentage of the total value in the entire draft as a whole. So more than you might think. And if you are a team that's in the top three, as Tennessee is picking number one overall this year, for example, they have a total of 3,787.7 JJ points. There's two things you can draw from that. Number one is 3,000 of those 3,787.7 are in that first pick. So approximately 80% of their total draft value is in that number one pick itself. Okay. The second is if you compare that the total JJ value, it seemed like the Ravens, who has 1,269.8 JJ points, is that they have almost exactly three times as much total draft value, draft capital to spend. The Ravens could trade all their draft picks to the Tennessee Titans, all 11 of them, and they would laugh at that if the Ravens wanted their first round, the number one overall pick in return. It's worth 2.5 times as much. So Cam Ward versus their entire draft, it ain't happening. So most trades are still use this JJ chart. And in fact, when it occurs in the first round, the second round, I always assume that the JJ chart, because it's the steepest of all current charts, is providing a premium for the team that's willing to trade back. So I talk about harvesting full JJ value. And that means that they essentially got a one-for-one relationship between the JJ pick values that they got that were later and the JJ pick that they traded that was the prime pick. So if you harvest full JJ value, that means you traded back and you got full value. You didn't take a discount. And that usually means you got more value because, it's a steep thing. So any other points about that I missed there, Garnett?
No, you hit it right on the spot. And I think the more that, obviously us as naive fans or whatever, but a lot of fans are just, they're willing to accept that and learn that, it will put you at peace. Like I'm not saying we should ever go for the first round pick. That was never my thing. Well, when we was talking on Twitter, but basically I was just like, hey, if we wanted to go, maybe in the top 15, like say 15 or 16, 15 to 20 range, it gave me an idea like, okay, we're so far back that, those compensatory picks that we think that we obviously we value them, mm-hmm. but a lot of people think since the Ravens are so well known for compensatory picks along with the Eagles, that they're thinking that, okay, we just package this up, we can move right there to where we need to be and get what we want. But in all reality, it's going to cost way more than that, sir.
Yeah, so Arizona is picking number 16 this season. They have traded their sixth round pick. They have no compensatory picks. So they only have six picks in the whole draft, and they have 1,726 JJ points, which is about 40% more than what the Ravens have. So gives you an idea of just how big a deal it is to tank in this league for starters. So tanking really has value, particularly at the bottom. The notion of winning a game for culture purposes at the end of the year is for the birds. And honestly, it really means the NFL needs a lottery system at the bottom, like other sports now have, to try and make it not automatic. You're making your fans feel pain with that loss. And in so doing, and they're usually the people who want it most, because the fans have the longest term outlook on their franchise. The owner has a relatively short-term outlook relative to the fans because he needs to make money and win now. And as fans, they can wait forever to win if they're the hardcore long-time season ticket holders. Now, there's a whole bunch of other people who want to win now, and don't want to wait and don't want to deal with anything. But your hardcore fan base is the most long-term fans you've got. Then comes the owner. Then the coaches are way further down because they could be out of a job. It doesn't matter if the organization is successful 4 years from now, if they're not there, and the player is the same thing. So that's kind of the hierarchy of long-term views that they have. And I know, Garnett, where do you think you fit in that group?
This is the weird thing. I don't know. It's a weird, unique thing. Cause every time I'm a steady listener. This, you're my from, at, and two, when I, from work, and I'm always listening to you guys. I'm listening to the inside office line as we speak with you and Chris Aguilar as we speak. So part two at that. Go listen to that, everybody. Shameless plug. But but the biggest thing where I'm at right now, it's like one of those things where I accept what this team is. And for me, yes, I want to win a Super Bowl. But at the same time, though, yeah, I care about the future. But at the same time, when I understand the structure of the team, And then we have a nucleus that's already there, and I know that nucleus is going to get paid. I'm willing to be aggressive. And so I'm right there, Ken, in between. Like, it's hard to decipher where I'm at exactly. I can't say I'm fully fall out super aggressive, like, hey, you know, F those picks. I've never been that guy. But I like how the Rams were there to be different. But I've never been the, hey, we're going to hold on to every pick and every player until the wheels fall off. So I'm literally right in between. Right. It's hard to say, Ken. I really don't know where I'm at. Okay, right in between.
That's fair. And a lot of people, think they're okay with it either way. And maybe it really takes a test to really, you know, go through and the test of maybe watching the draft together with other people who have different viewpoints is one really good way to do it. There's a lot of good draft shows out there. I will ask you guys to give us a shot. We're working on what I think will be a very cool guest host for day one, but we've got good hosts and panelists for all 3 days. Hoping to have Garnett on there for one day at least. And you've been a mainstay in the past, Garnett, often way into the depths of the third day, when there's going to be a lot of activity with Ravens having 8 picks on day 3 this year.
Absolutely. I never forget, what was his name? The guy, Daniel Jeremiah. He like, I would eat a ball of paper if the Ravens do not make a move in the final, like the final stages of the draft. Mm-hmm. And obviously we did, but it's just the fact that just obviously he was part of the organization and part of the scouting tree at one point. But it's just one of those things where it's always there. And I still remember to this day where we were just me, you, Coach, we were having a good time in the, I think, day 2. And then after that, a couple years later, me, you, and Cordell Jason. Woodland.
Yep.
Yeah. Jason too, but Cordell Woodland, we were, mm-hmm. you know, having a good old conversation. It's just the fact that, you know, just meeting, you know, extraordinary people that you follow on Twitter and then you communicating with them and then learning about them is an awesome thing to me, sir.
I really appreciate that. And it's something that's always made me uncomfortable. We're both civilians now. Please don't call me sir all the time. I really thank you for your service, but we
you, sir.
We should be seeing eye to eye, my friend.
Right.
There are 4 ways the Ravens can impact their value on draft day. And I want to talk through those there because each of them is very limited in terms of what you can actually do and what you have to give up to do it. But the first is the one I think most people think of is they can trade multiple picks to move up. So you've got, and that can involve a 2-for-2 pick trade where they're trading, you know, 2 picks that are in the middle of 2 other picks, but they have higher aggregate value in order to move up. They have the ability to do those kinds of trades. They're also very limited by the total JJ value they have.
Yes, sir. So, and that's the one thing I started to realize about the thing. That's where I think, Ken, this is where I think where a lot of us as Ravens fans that are not familiar with the JJ chart, when we hear third round pick, we think, oh, that still has a lot of value. Mm-hmm. But the one thing we're not understanding is when we hear compensatory third round pick, it's still good. Same thing with 4th, but it's not like the, you know, obviously it's a little bit further up compared to, you know, a regular 3rd round pick. I think that's what really a lot of us are need to grasp of. It's like, hey, how much is the value of that compensatory pick? This is just me. I'm trying to understand it myself.
Right.
Hopefully this give guidance to everybody, but the compensatory pick of a 3rd round, let's say wherever we're sitting with it, how much value does that really hold compared to like the market? Yes, sir.
Okay. First of all, terrific example to point out here, Garnett. So let's try and go through this. So if first of all, there's only a very limited number of third round compensatory picks given out each year. It's extremely limited. There's actually more for minority coaching hires. So if you have a minority coach that's hired off of your team, then you get 2 third round picks, and I believe it's consecutive years is the way that works. But in terms of third round compensatory picks for free agents you lose, it's actually extremely rare that one is ever granted. So most of the time you end up getting a 4th round pick for a really star player who's of significant value. And we'll start with that and we'll do a 3rd as well. But let's say you hold the middle pick in the 3rd round by the ordered method. That's pick number 80 That has a JJ value of 190. So I'm just going to think about that. You don't have to write it down like I am, but you can. If you have the last pick in the third round, which would be a compensatory pick, that pick is worth less than half of that. It's worth 92 points. And that's at number 102. Detroit has it this year. It's worth 92 points. If you have a fourth round pick, and we'll give you the first pick of the compensatory picks in the fourth round, that's only worth 38.5 picks. So it's almost worth exactly 20% of what a middle of the third round pick is. So you need five of those bad boys to move up to get one middle of the third round pick. I don't think people really get the relative value of a third and a fourth round selection.
Yeah, I see it already. If you do the math with the third round to the last or the last of the third, 98 points value. If I did that right, I know I'm a Marine and I eat crayons, as they say, but literally that is insane. Like I get it. And I said, it took me a minute to actually pay attention. Like, man, who really cares about the JJ? But then you start to realize, holy crap, if you really think about it, the JJ chart almost somewhat, it really gave life to like PFF and all these other analytics that you start what, you know, we're starting to pick up on and, you know, really follow and let us be the final judgment for a lot of stuff. So that's insane, sir.
All right. So anyway, you can trade multiple picks and you can move up, but then of course you're limited with how much JJ value you have in total. Is still going to be how much can you attract someone to trade a higher pick. Now, it is possible, and the Ravens, one of the reasons why they trade back a lot more than they trade up is that they think getting full JJ is excellent because they really believe the valuation scale ought to be flatter than what the JJ chart is. Or in other words, they think the relativity between, say, the end of the third round pick and that middle of the third round pick, there's less of a difference between those two selections. And so they're more willing to trade for more later picks, and especially if they're harvesting that full JJ value, they can come out looking really well in that. So that actually favors moving back, not moving up. And since most teams are going to want to harvest the full JJ value for the picks, the Ravens are going to be loath to move up without really good reason. So they has to be at the intersection of need and value streets, the player that they want, you know, coming up on the board at that moment. Then you're willing to overpay for a little bit in terms of draft capital.
So Ken, my whole thing is when it comes to, you know, for us as Ravens, and when we draft, it's like we sat there together on multiple draft live shows. Mm-hmm. We were happy for, you know, the Travis Jones where we're, you know, he was supposed to be first yep. round, second, and he falls to the, you know, late into later rounds. And that was a steal. And I think that we're so like thinking that it's going to happen every year. I think that's what, as Ravens fans, we will get a Travis Jones or, you know, those Michael Pierce will fall in our lap type of thing. I think that's where it really draws in. Like, hey, we haven't seen that in a minute. We haven't seen that in a while. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen a Za'Darius Smith or Matthew Judah. I think that's where the fans are like, hey, you know, F those picks. Let's find a way to move up and get those guys. That's where I think a lot of the issue.
All right. Well, let's look at the recent drafts and who has really fallen into the Ravens' lap a little later. I really didn't like the Roger Rosengarten pick at the time, and it's too late. The early returns are excellent, but it's still too early to say that he was drafted too late in that draft at number 62. But it appears to be value that dropped. If we want to look back to previous years where the Ravens had guys fall into their lap, in 2023, the previous draft, Tavius Robinson might be in that group. Andrew Voorhees may be in that group. We don't know yet. Andrew Voorhees just entering his second season. I'll go back another year to 2022. Travis Jones certainly falls in that group. Charlie Kolar, perhaps in the fourth round. Isaiah Likely, definitely in the fourth round. So Daniel Faalele in the fourth round. Whether you like Daniel Faalele or not, whether you really believe he's the answer for the right guard, that's still looking like a pretty damn good value pick. Where they got him in round four. I know there's gonna be people that disagree with me on that, but even if you don't like Faalele, then take Likely as the guy that they got who was outstanding. The Ravens do seem to get these guys fairly regularly. I'm not understanding the notion that they've had, you know, they were in a long time without getting any and this and that. I mean, they had Geno Stone in the seventh round. They got Nnamdi Madubuike at number 71, which was a good drop for him at the time we knew it, or we thought we knew it. They got Justice Hill and Ben Powers in the fourth round the year before. In 2018, they got everybody. They literally got everybody. Mark Andrews in the third round. They got Deshaun Elliott in round six. Imagine if they still had him right now. They got Bradley Bozeman in the sixth round. They got the MVP of the Miami Dolphins in round seven that year, Zach Sealer. The 2024 MVP. Yeah.
I literally bring him up maybe like once a month. Like that, I think that that's the issue right there. You clicked on that guy. I'll stay with that guy right there. That guy should still be a Raven to this day. We just didn't give him no bird. I think that's the problem. I think we're, it's like a combination of a lot of things, Ken. It's like either we get the guy and we don't know he's the guy and he's already, and we let the guy go, or we give time to the guy that everybody thinks the guy, but he, it just doesn't work out. You know, we'll end up with a. I'm not saying he was going to be nobody, but like Iman Marshall, where, you know, where right. We literally just put a lot of years. We just basically just burning up his contract and let it play out. Or, you know, the JADs of the world, where we're just like, hey, yeah. Well, he's a good depth piece, you know, special teams. So I think that's where it's like a positive and a pro and con, I should say, more than anything. I think that's where we're. It's at a crossroads as a fan base where we're hoping to get that all pro edge in the late round. You know, does it, like I said, does a Darius or the
Matt Judon,
you know, the Judons of the world. I think that's where it's tough, Ken, because due to just us being successful, that's the problem. We're so successful.
It is difficult to ever win with lower round draft picks. I could just tell you any reasonable amount of study is going to tell you there's three teams that absolutely emerge way above the canopy in terms of their draft value that they get. And that's the Ravens, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Green Bay Packers. They are the three organizations which have way outstripped the value they've had to draft with. I don't think this is a new change in the DaCosta era or anything like that. I think he's been every bit as successful as Ozzie in terms of his what is now a pretty long run success. You know, this is seventh draft for DaCosta coming up now.
Yep, seventh. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And you're right about that. And an ongoing, just another team to throw out there. This is where I find me and you having a funny little back and forth. It's basically like, I know I wanted to see the Rams do a thing just because it was different. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Ain't no effing way. I'm not trying to curse on here. Ain't no effing way that the Rams would ever be repeated. Like, it's just, it's hard. And the thing, they were so successful after with the draft. Like, they probably have arguably the best defensive line in the league.
They've definitely had good draft picks on their picks that have been after the first round where they traded it every year for seven straight years.
Right. It's not repeatable.
It's probably not repeatable, but the reason it was possible in the first place is they're competing in the NFC. So in the AFC currently, you've got the murderer's row of quarterbacks. And while it sucks for Lamar, it sucks for Ravens fans that Mahomes and Allen and Burrow and Lamar are all in the league at the same time. It sucks a lot worse if you're a fan of the Pittsburgh Steelers. It sucks a lot worse if you're a fan of the Cleveland Browns. And you know, there isn't an alternative way to easily put your franchise together that can you know, fight for success against those quarterbacks. The Eagles have done it by completely mortgaging their future against other NFC teams. That's a winning strategy in the NFC. The Rams did it by trading every freaking draft pick they ever saw, including their future, away, and they made it work. In the AFC, I think it's a completely different ballgame. I think it'd be a fool's errand to try either of those strategies against the AFC murderer's row of quarterbacks.
I completely agree with you on that part. That's why I say, like, well, those two, like, well, like, perfect example, when people are like, all we got to do is just get a Jalen Carter. I'm like, oh, so that means all you got to do is get a Carson Wentz, then trade him for a first round. And then it's like, it's so much that has to go on for those two factions to work, you know. And so that's why I say I would never ever, even though I'm a huge Howie Roseman fan and a huge, like, you know, I like people that be different, like, you know, go against the grain and then just willing to take the chance. Like, it's just, if we just have the same cycle of just going on and on, it's like, all right, man, this gets a little boring. But for us, it's like, I respect what we do, and just hope I know you don't like calling them lottery picks, but hopefully those picks work out, and then we just land the right flop. It's just, you know, poker, I guess. You know, you just right. get the right cards in your hand.
Well, I think in a certain way, DaCosta's playing a game when he calls them lottery tickets himself. He's basically saying that, yeah, go ahead and trade me your lottery tickets. So they're not worth anything to me either. Oh yeah, they're of this low quality and whatnot. The truth of the matter is, he's got a much higher probability of making that pick work out than any one of his 31 other compatriots, any of his colleagues in the league. And you know, the more he can pick up of those, the more he can abuse the rest of the league. And it's been shown for years. And you can show me a handful of picks that didn't work out. You can show me multiple six or a set of fourths or this or that that didn't work out. Why? I don't understand. Well, because you're not looking at the whole picture is the basic problem. The Ravens have in their history with basically the same two guys controlling the draft for their entire 29 years have had tremendous consistent success. That stands over the rest of the league along with the Packers and Steelers. So it's unfortunate one of those teams is in their division because they'd have really had a great run of it otherwise. But that's the way it works out sometimes, and I think it's good. But let's go back to the kind of the main theme of the show if we can. We talked about trading multiple picks to move up, and the options are just limited in terms of what they can do that, but they have other options. They could trade picks from future seasons.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep, to mental clarity, and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you about takes about 15 minutes and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way. And don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized, chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's HIMS.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. HIMS.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with the healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.
Seasons. Now, one of the problems with doing that, one of the, I don't know if it's a problem, but it's a characteristic of it, is that you have to give up basically about a round of value to do that. So when they moved back into the first round to get Kyle Bowler in 2003, they traded the pick from 2004 that ended up being Vince Wilfork, a Hall of Famer. If you want to be in a better space, in 2019, they traded an extra second round pick along with their current second round pick to move back into the first to get Lamar Jackson. That's the better way to look at it. But moving back, particularly moving back into the first round, very, very expensive proposition. And it's true in round two and three as well. And more often than not, you really don't make those kind of deals work. You end up, maybe you trade three number ones for Deshaun Watson. There's more examples of it not working out than there are examples of it really working out.
Right. And that's the one thing, Ken, that's where I don't really necessarily push back on, but I just think as a Ravens fan and knowing this organization, we're never going to, do something super, super crazy of, that unnatural, I should say. But the one thing is, like, I think that if we're very methodical, strategical type of organization, and I think that when we talk about trading up or whatever, I think the problem is Ravens fans, or a lot of us, or some of us, will think the worst as an organization. Like, oh, we're gonna end up, we're not gonna be like the Browns and do this, but no, we're not. If we was to do a trade to where it's more of a high stake, I should say, I believe I have the trust and the fidelities of my organization because of the fact that due to the success going on almost 20 years with John Harbaugh and, Eric and, before that with Ozzy, that we're going to be able to be okay. We think about this. We got lucky. Well, it's not really luck when your quarterback gets hurt, but we ended up picking at 14 for Kyle Hamilton. That was, we wasn't supposed to be there. And we got there, and then, 2 years later, we're in the AFC Championship game, healthy-wise, So I just look at it as, if we were just to be, for me, just to be a little, I feel like every year, I said this in a tweet where, what Bisciotti said, it gave me comfort, and then obviously we're seeing a pattern. Every year, we're playing more into the void year dollars where we never really did. And I'm feeling like, okay, well, we're starting to creep in to the unknown, where to a lot of people, that's the unknown, and we're being more aggressive, and I'm fine with that. That's what I want to see, is just the fact that, Lamar's not getting any younger. I remember every year we used to be like, Lamar's only 23. Lamar's about to be 29 soon. So it's, we got to, go ahead, squeeze the juice. Go ahead.
I wanted to say, along those lines, the Steelers fans for many years said, at some point, Ed Reed and Ray Lewis aren't going to be any good anymore. They're going to have to retire. And they were saying that literally for about 8 years before it, finally Ed Reed, left and Ray Lewis, retired as well, of course, after winning the Super Bowl.
Right.
But it's, you can wait a long time for that. I want to stick on topic here with trading a future pick into this year. There've been three major times this has happened in Ravens history. Okay. Once they acquired the pick. Okay, and that was in the 1999 draft with Atlanta. The Atlanta Falcons asked the Ravens if they'd trade their second round pick, which is fairly early in the second round, and they gave them their first next year. And Atlanta thought, we just went to the Super Bowl in 1998. We're going to be drafting late in the first round. It's not that much of a move back. Ozzie jumped on it, ended up being the number 5 overall pick and turned into Jamal Lewis. Okay. So waiting, being patient, trading back, usually the killer strategy there. The two other teams that's happened, we already mentioned. Kyle Bowler trade was a disaster, of course, for the Ravens in terms of their 2004 draft. Really was crappy because of it. That Dwan Edwards was their headline draft pick. They lost the spot that was used to draft Vince Wilfork at the same point, which, by the way, if you're going to draft Dwan Edwards, you probably would have drafted Vince Wilfork at number 21. So it was a pretty horrible decision then to do that. Even though they had a decent year in 2003, I think actually New England was probably felt pretty stiffed on the fact that they only got the 21st pick, but they didn't after they picked up a Hall of Famer for it. So that was number 2. Number 3 was the Lamar Jackson trade. And it's the last pick in the first round. It was kind of a buyer's market there. It was a nice situation because the Eagles said, you know what? We're not in a position to make use of this 50-year option on this player. It's for sale. You know, and it meant they might have needed an interior lineman, right? They might have wanted a position where the 50-year option didn't have a lot of value. So they basically put it up for bidding, and the Ravens offered them 2 second-round picks, one this year, one next year. And they took it, and the Ravens made what undoubtedly is going to be considered Robinson for Pappas to Orioles fans in terms of the value acquired in the trade. So outstanding trade that time. So it's worked out. One time out of 3, the Ravens have been make the very substantial trade up for next year's value work. And twice they picked the correct side of being on the trade down method, or the trade into the future method.
Yes, sir. So we gave up 2 seconds to Philadelphia, sir.
2 seconds to Philadelphia for the 30
seconds.
So they
basically got Jalen Hurts off the 2nd.
I you know, it doesn't really matter who they got.
No.
The Ravens drafted two seconds for Lamar Jackson. Yeah.
No, I get it. It clicked. I'm like, damn. So we gave them that. It just. I'm just looking at it. But I understand. I understand the schematics of it. It's just for me. For what you just said, it's a beautiful art that we do, where we're like, you know, the guys, I guess you can say the fiends, that's what I call them. The guys, the teams that are fiending to, we need this guy. This guy's going to put us over. And then, hey, well, how about you give us this and then we'll play ball. Okay, yeah, we'll get it. And then next thing you know, like you said, we'll end up with Jamal Lewis, like you said, which is insane. I didn't know that. Yes, sir.
Okay, so the second round pick that the Eagles made, it had been in 2019 because they drafted Lamar in 2018. So the 2 second round picks, the first one was Dallas Goedert. I assume it was pick 49 that they got from the Ravens. I'm not 100% sure, but it was the only second that the Eagles had that year. And then the second they used in the next 2 years, they had 2 of them. I don't know which one came from the Ravens, but they got 2 pretty good players, Miles Sanders and another guy who didn't have that great of a career, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. So Jalen Hurts was still a year removed from that. So, but okay. In any case, the point is still the same. It's from the Ravens' perspective, it's 2 number 2s for Lamar Jackson, which I don't care if you draft 2 Hall of Famers out of that. It's still going to be worth it.
Right. It's a steal regardless. Yeah. Yes, sir. But you put me in some game just now, like just, hey, man, just, you know, just the ones who are more anxious about, hey, I need this. This is going to put us back in contentions. I never thought about it like that, especially from the Jamal Lewis angle. That's insane. I didn't know that. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
It was a great trade, certainly from the early years. Let's move on. So there's a third way you can acquire additional capital, and that is you can trade players to get it. And this is where we get into arguments that just frustrate the hell out of every listener. I've taken a lot of heat, frankly, on Twitter over the possibility of trading players entering their 4th season, which is the ideal time you want to trade them. They can get a fair amount of value for them still. They traded Marquise Brown and got what effectively was about a high 2nd round pick. It actually was an exchange of a 1st for a 2nd that was ended up being about a high 2nd round pick that they exchanged. They traded, who's the other player they traded for? They got them the Linderbaum pick. No, that was
a straight up. It was a straight up robbery.
Yeah, that was the Marquise Brown trade. There's another one that they've done that I'm forgetting right now, and it's driving me nuts that they traded Hurst. Well, yeah, they traded Hayden Hurst after 2 years for a two. Was there another one? That might have been it. I mean, they unraveled that whole draft. I know. Orlando Brown, entering his fourth season, was traded for what effectively was a middle of the second round pick. Now, Orlando Brown was a fine player still in the league, and he's a pretty good left tackle. And if the Ravens had kept him, that might have, you know, ended some anxiety over Ronnie Stanley and the years he's had in between. But in truth, they had to pay the teams that had Orlando Brown since have had to pay market value for him. And that's where the value of the trade really is in what the last year under contract is worth. And that's why we look at a couple different players who were in their last year under contract. The Ravens have several, but Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely are two big ones because they've got a stacked tight end group. They got three. What I mean by that is there's three contracts that all come due at the end of 2025. And I've pointed out the value in unstacking those contracts, particularly if they want to draft a tight end this year. This is not a bad draft for tight ends. They could get somebody and they could have them have a roster spot for them. Whereas right now, like if Kadir Ishmael or whoever they draft this year was like Travis Vokolek last year, or maybe another player this year, they might not have room for him on the team with the three tight ends they have. And also the fact they use a fullback in Patrick Ricard.
Right. Ken, I think, you know, just discussing a little bit earlier about, this is the best analogy I can put. It's like buying a house, or you're pursuing to buy a house, and it's basically like earnest money. How aggressive do you want to be for going after what you want to go for in a draft, pick wise? You know, obviously, you know, if you want to just see if you can get maybe a fourth or fifth, you know, you throw Mark Andrews. So basically, hey, I'm going to throw $5,000 for earnest money for this house, trying to buy this house. And then if you want to be like, you know, more, you know, serious about it, you know, and throw $10,000 on the table, AKA you want to throw Isaiah Likely out there, which I think a lot of us as fans, it will not do due to just, hey, he's the future. We're already in our mentally.
Yeah, it would hurt too much.
It would hurt too much. Like, hey, this is the future. Why would you let go of the future? And I think that's the hard part as a fan base, is where we will gain that love for a player. And it's like, I don't want to see him go. He's the future. Or, hey, or Mark, in Mark's case, he done so much for us ever since he's been here. You know, a perfect, you know, role model for the fan base. You know, he's just, you know, a ball player. Come, mm-hmm. You know, go to work, lunch pail, go home. You know, so it's torn in between. But just to get back on topic, literally, it's about how aggressive you want to be when it comes to just, you know, making a proposal. Like, hey, do you want to get a third or fourth, or do you want to see if you can get maybe an early third, along with adding additional parts of that trade?
So the point you're making, I think, very well is that you really need to trade value to get value. And yes, as sir. Much as we love Mark Andrews, another team's looking at the Mark Andrews flaws, specifically in his birth certificate and injury history in recent times. They're probably also looking at the playoff stuff, but I don't think too much. Our Mark Andrews had a fantastic year last year during the regular season. You know, high touchdown percentage, didn't have a lot of contested targets the way he has a lot of the past as Jackson's bailout option, which really has increased his passer rating throwing to him the last couple of years. Last 2 years, by the way, I think a lot of people on this who are fans of the show know this, but the Ravens passer rating throwing to the tight end is 143.5, and they've had 30 touchdowns and only one interception throwing to the tight ends during that time. Now, that wasn't true before. There were a lot of interceptions that were targeting Mark Andrews in 21 and again in 22 when he had sunk to kind of the nadir of his effectiveness on a per target basis, because he was getting a lot of marginal targets, he was the only guy who could bail Lamar out. And Lamar's gotten much better distributing the ball to more people, and more people are helping him by running coordinated bailout targets at the same time, bailout routes at the same time, which I think is a credit to Monken, by the way, as well as Lamar.
Yes, sir. I think that's the one thing that I noticed, like in the Monken era, you know, you're not getting the ball if you don't, you know, be on time a lot. And the one thing that Mark made a living off of is off-time plays, if you notice. Or he had a lot of option routes, you can say, for a lot under the Greg Roman era. And that was my suspicion, where it's like, okay, you know, I know we heard some I heard some grumblings, you know, during the camp, you know, when he first got there, when Monken got there, is just, hey, you know, if you don't run the right, you know, 12 yard out, you're not getting it, is, or whatever. I might be wrong or I might be right. But my whole thing is for Mark is like, it's just like you said, the A certificate. I feel like he's in the, well, Jason Witten stage of his career, where, you know, just a nice, productive, consistent, steady Eddie type of tight end. And I feel like, you know, from what John says, I don't know how, it's a good question to ask you. I know we're not trying to be off topic, but how much do you put into what John says, where, hey, you know, can't wait to have Mark back, this, you know, had a good talks with him and all these things. And how much do you put into that when it comes to, like, trade value, or do you just think it's all coach talk?
I think it's all coach speak. I don't think there's anything else to be said. I think there's actually a pretty high probability he stays with the Ravens. But he actually has more trade value now than before the Ravens paid his roster bonus. It's kind of a paradoxical, but since the Ravens paid his bonus, now another team doesn't have to, and his contract value is only about $7 million that he would cost somebody else to be under contract with them. So it's all coach speak. I think if the right trade came along for Mark Andrews, the Ravens would take it. I think that's pretty much the way they approach all the things. I want to look at this from one other different perspective here, and that is the notion that A and B and C and D are the future. So we'll start with the Ravens' third round players, 2022 draftees, or another year where they had their third year this year, and they're some players who the Ravens, I don't think it really matters if they keep them or not. And Jalen Armour-Davis is in that group. But among the players that it really matters whether they keep them or not, I put Daniel Falele in that group. Kyle Hamilton is certainly in that group. Travis Jones is in that group. Charlie Kohler is in that group. Isaiah Likely is in that group. That's five. Tyler Linderbaum is in that group. And then I think that's really it. You have six players there. I can add one more. Ardarius Washington is in that group, who's on an RFA year, season is in his last year. That's seven players. And you look at those seven players and you say they're the future. And they're guys who were available for extensions right now. The Ravens could have signed any of them long-term. They didn't sign even one of them to a long-term deal so far this offseason, but it can be done. But here's my point. Not all of them will be the Ravens' future. The Ravens will probably have to let two or even three of those guys walk after their fourth season with the team. Now, Linderbaum is probably a prime example there of a guy that may just be too expensive for the Ravens to re-sign. If he wants Creed Humphrey money, I'd say the Ravens have two options. Let him walk at the end of a year, or they can trade him during this draft. That wouldn't be popular. It would be very disruptive to the Ravens offensive line. But I think those are the two options that they realistically have, because I don't think it's a realistic option to either pay him a fifth-year option, which would be about $23 million, or to sign him to a long-term deal that's in excess of Creed Humphrey and sets the market, which would be about over $18 million per year.
Yes, sir. And you know me, I've been I'm probably the number one Tyler Linderbaum fan out of everybody. I was probably the one who started the train and the conductor and was the caboose. For me, I have no issue, you know, letting him walk. I know that's crazy to say, but because I feel very confident the Ravens organization, front office, that to have a plan, you know, a great insurance policy, you know, idea. So That's just me having confidence in a well-built organization. So they let him walk. I completely understand. With Travis Jones, I feel Travis Jones unlocks the potential of Matt Ibike, who you pay for, which isn't. That's why I say it's so complex to me, where you pay $20 million to a guy but you need this guy to unlock that $20 million value, which is, hey, that's how it works sometimes. It's weird. But for center play, you can hide centers. Yes, as a fan, I would hate to see him go due to just the next level that he can get to, you know, on the running game. But as we all know, passing protection is way more important than running. And I feel that he can take the next level. I feel like one thing that's gets that doesn't get spoke about, he went against Murder Row his first year. It wasn't the best performance, but you're going against Dexter Lawrence your first year. You're going against Vita Vea your first year. You're going against when BJ Hill, when they had him on the Bengals. Like he went against Murder Row. Yeah, he didn't have a perfect, season, but who would that first year? But he did a good job. Yep.
It wasn't a good pass blocking year, no matter how you slice it. But I understand what you're pointing to say. He jumped way up, improved tremendously in his second year as a pass blocker. One of the reasons why I'm not giving him top money right now is that he regressed again in year three. He's just an average, league average pass blocker right now. Not really better, just league average. If you look at PFF scores or whatever, don't get caught up in the combined grades. The pass blocking is several times more important. It's kind of like on-base percentage versus slugging. On-base percentage is more important. Don't get caught up in the bull crap of the combined score. It really doesn't work. It's this pass blocking traits are what are really important, and there is weaker side of the game. And unfortunately, that means he's not worth top center money. I think there's leadership that goes in there. I think there are a lot of other positive elements. I just don't think he's worth the kind of money that Creed Humphrey is worth, who does both very well.
Right, and I somewhat understand what you're saying, Ken. That's why I say this is where we're like somewhere, we're right there, but we somewhat deviate just a little bit. It's just, I just feel like just having, somewhat value Faalele a little bit, just because, what he came from a fourth round, and he's a starting,
No, it's not his round, it's how he played the last five games. That's to be specific, it has nothing to do with where he was drafted.
So, the five games, I just feel like if you was to put a better guard next to on both sides of Leonard, but I think it would be better off. Like I feel like it wouldn't be crazy. It wouldn't be a crazy adjustment. I feel like for it, I think that's what the hard part is. Is where I was a huge Faalele guy. I remember when we was doing the draft show. It's like I was super excited when we drafted him. And it's just the fact that I'm thinking okay, he needs to take the next level. If he can just drop 20 pounds and just get confident in his ability, I feel like Faalele could be deadly in my opinion, but that just we're praying for that next level. But it's there, physicality. If he can just bring that out, we're good. But I to get back on point, sir, I feel like I said, if we let Tyler Linderbaum walk, I wouldn't have a problem with it. Yeah, it would hurt to see him go, but it's easier to find that center in the second or third guy, second or third round, and keep it going.
Let's tie this back to what our topic is here. If the team comes with the first pick on day two, the first pick of the second round, and says, hey, we'll trade you this pick for Tyler Linderbaum. We didn't get our center in the first round. He was drafted already. We maybe wanted Booker or somebody. We didn't get him. We'll trade you pick number 33 for Tyler Linderbaum. Do you do it or do you not?
Absolutely. It's like a reset. We did this. It's like almost like a Hollywood Brown situation where we're resetting. Yes, sir. Easy money.
I think I got to do it too. I want to make sure. I don't think there are a lot of people out there who necessarily say yes to that. And there would be a lot of disruption for the Ravens offensive line. They're already short a bunch of interior linemen, and who's starting at center now, Ben Cleveland. You really got to think about, how the Ravens have to approach the rest of that draft because of it. But I trust the Ravens to get it right if they make that pick for the first pick of round two. I think it would be too much to pass up if they did it. I want to move on here because we got to get to the end of the show here. We always talk about having a 15 or 20 minute episode. We get into this interesting discussion with you, Garnett.
Absolutely.
So the last thing that the Ravens can do is something we kind of hit on earlier, is they can trade a 2025 pick to another team for a 2026 pick, which upgrades it. And having 11 picks, this could be very attractive to the Ravens. They could trade a sixth round pick in 25 for a fifth round pick in 26. And there's going to be some people who turn their nose up at that, but the Ravens are going to be competing with Lamar Jackson next year as well in 2026. And it will be really nice to have additional picks in that draft as well. And I think if you can upgrade what you've got this year, you do it. If that kind of an option, that's an opportunity to reset your draft. If you do that.
Yes, sir. I'm not against it. It's going to be a short answer for me. I don't have no problem doing that. It's just the fact that it's crazy. Like, as a huge fan, I remember you and Alec was talking about, you went on a spirited conversation about, you know, hey, you know, we should be worried about, you know, this year and next year and years down the road. And I'm with you on that. It's just because of the fact that you don't know what can happen tomorrow or, you know, just those pieces. Hey, cold turkey. Hey, I want to go to this team or whatever. You know, you lose, you know, a right guard or something in that situation. Now we're in a rebuild. So I'm with you on that. It's just I have no issue trying to get better for future plans. Yes, sir.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, four different ways you can pick up. You can pick up value. Trade multiple picks to move up. Trade picks from a future season, trade players to get additional draft capital, or trade a 2025 pick away and accept your value in 2026. You're deferring your value in that way. There isn't any, the point of this was, there isn't any magical way to create value without losing a lot of football games. That's the magical way to create value. And the Ravens aren't in the process of doing that. I'm never going to be in favor of tanking as a season ticket holder. I want to have the fun of the experience of going to these games, and I'm tired of people basically trading away my future as a season ticket holder and PSL holder for their own fantasies about how it might change the 2025 Ravens. That's extremely frustrating to me personally.
I feel you. I'm not a season ticket holder. I live in North Carolina. It's just for me, it's just, like I said, I've grown to accept to what we are and just have to really appreciate what we have done and going on 20 years, you know, as in under the John Harbaugh train era. Yes, I wanted a new head coach, not because I don't like John. Crazy fact, like just a shameless plug. I wrote John letters, got stuff back from John. You know, it's just telling how good of, you know, good job you are. It's none of that. It's just the fact that I'm not, I just love change. It's people fear it. People are very accustomed to seeing what they see every day. For me, it's just like, hey, what if we do this? What would happen? You know, and that's how I am as a person. So when it comes to the whole aspect of it, I'm where I'm at. I feel comfortable with the Ravens organization, with all we do, sir.
All right. We appreciate you, Garnett. Always always a pleasure talking football with you. We always have a good, nice discussion when we do. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yes, sir. So you can find me on Twitter/X, you know, what Elon Musk has, you know, took over, at Garnett478. You can hit me up, DM me, hit me up any type of way. Probably, you know, we'll have a nice, you know, conversation about anything from ball to just life. I don't care. I'm just a good dude with a good heart, with a good purpose.
And I can assert from that, for many years of knowing Garnett, that he's a good man with a very good heart. And, I can tell you stories, but I'm not going to do it right here on air. Appreciate you coming on. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. If you have an idea like Garnett that you want to talk about some specific aspect you're passionate about, that's great. That's exactly what I'm looking for. There'll be a lot of time for that after the draft, and we're done with that. Right now, we've got a very booked up schedule through those draft nights. Hope you will join us for those as much as you can. It is the fun way to have an interactive Ravens-centric draft experience. We're completely Ravens-centric. We're working together on a spreadsheet with picks and whatnot. It's a format I think was really fun and took a big step forward last year with this, you know, interactive spreadsheet approach that we use with all the people who are on the stream. Great group of panelists are planned, and I hope you'll join us. Garnett, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Cam.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.